Hello, ahlan wa sahlan, and welcome to another episode of Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston since 2002. Houston's community station, 90.1 FM, FM HD1, Galveston 89.5 FM, and Huntsville 91.7 FM. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. This show is syndicated and it airs on dozens of radio stations in different US and European cities. During this episode of Arab Voices, episode number 1173, I will have a couple of segments. First, we will listen to the latest electronic intifada newscast covering the ongoing Israeli genocide and ethnic cleansing in occupied Palestine. Then I will air some of the remarks delivered at a press conference organized by American Muslims for Palestine in collaboration with Code Pink, the Council on American Islamic Relations, and the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations, condemning Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's visit to the White House. We will hear from Dr. Osama Abu Rashid with American Muslims for Palestine, Robert Macau with the Council on American Islamic Relations, Sarah with the Palestinian Youth Movement, Medea Benjamin with Code Pink, and Rabbi David Feldman. Let's begin with the latest electronic intifada newscast covering the ongoing Israeli genocide and ethnic cleansing in occupied Palestine.
This is the electronic intifada newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 643 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israel has bombarded areas across Gaza this week, killing approximately 670 Palestinians and injuring more than 2,800 between July 2nd and July 9th, according to the Ministry of Health in Gaza. The Gaza Government Media Office stated on Monday, July 7th, that Israel had committed 59 separate massacres in 100 hours, killing nearly 300 people, 99 of whom were targeted by the Israeli army at U.S.-Israeli so-called aid distribution points. Today, on Thursday, the Health Ministry reported that Israel killed at least 82 Palestinians and wounded 247 in 24 hours. Earlier on Thursday, an Israeli drone strike in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza killed at least 13 people, mostly children and women, when they were lining up outside a volunteer-run charity to obtain food supplements. Al Jazeera's Tarek Abu Azoum reported from the site of the massacre, saying that, quote, "Evidence of the strike is all around. This is a small but very deep hole in the ground resulting from the Israeli attack. You can see one of the shoes left by a Palestinian child, a shattered window in a nearby house. There are craters on the wall left by Israeli drone shrapnel." Reporter Moaz Al-Khalut reported from Gaza City on Monday, where attacks on the city and surrounding neighborhoods have been nonstop.
The ongoing Israeli airstrikes killed many Palestinians today. The last strike targeted a group of civilians in the center of Gaza City. I'm talking to you from Al Ahli Arab Hospital. While injured people arrived to this health facility on foot and by carts, and all of these who just arrived are receiving treatment on the ground. What struck me and what shocked me the most is to see a little child while taking his last breath on the ground here. I'm talking to you while there is a helicopter is opening fire on some point here or there. I'm not sure if you can.
That was Moaz Al-Khalut. On Tuesday, Israel attacked the Burej refugee camp in central Gaza, killing and wounding Palestinian families as they slept. Just before 3 a.m., Israeli airstrikes hit tent shelters, engulfing the area in flames. A survivor told Al Jazeera that, quote, "The attack felt like a ring of fire. These are school children. What is it about this school? There's nothing in it except children. It shelters only kids who have nowhere else to go. These drones are targeting nylon tents where people are simply trying to sleep. I honestly don't know why." Another displaced Palestinian who witnessed the attack said he and 10 others sleeping in a tent suddenly woke up to the sound of intense bombing and blinding lights. Quote, "The explosions were so powerful that even our blankets were completely burned," he said. "We started checking on the children and trying to make sure everyone was okay. My hands are still covered in soot as I've been trying to salvage whatever I can. On Wednesday, July 9th, Israel dropped an estimated 20 bombs on Gaza City's Tufah neighborhood, using heavy missiles that leveled buildings to the ground. A baby girl was pulled from the rubble in the aftermath of an attack also on Wednesday in central Gaza City. Mahmoud Bassal, the spokesperson for the Palestinian Civil Defense, told reporters while holding the infant that, quote, "the bombing was on a heavily populated house, the youngest of whom inside the building is this little girl, who is not even a few months old. Most or possibly everyone who was inside the apartment were injured or martyred. There is a woman martyr. We don't know if she was the mother of this child. In 90% of the bombings that are happening right now, it is these children who pay the price, who are targeted, killed, and injured."
وهناك شهيدة لا نعلم هل الأم هي والدة هذه الطفلة لكن حقيقة المشهد صعب جدا أكثر من 20 إصابة بهذا الاستجداف الواقع صعب.
That was Mahmoud Bassal of the Palestinian Civil Defense. And Israel is issuing consecutive forced displacement orders, mostly in Gaza City and Khan Yunus. On Tuesday, the United Nations Humanitarian Office stated that, quote, "even the smaller areas where people are being forced to concentrate, now down to about 15% of the strip and shrinking, are fragmented and lack the most basic infrastructure and services. Like the rest of Gaza, they remain extremely unsafe. Across the strip, families are trying to survive this nightmare, protect their children to the extent possible, and search for whatever minimal food exists," the UN said. Since mid-March, when Israel broke the ceasefire, the Israeli military has issued 54 displacement orders, placing about 297 square kilometers under displacement, 81% of the entire Gaza Strip, the UN says. In addition to the relentless airstrikes on Gaza, more than 770 Palestinians have been killed and more than 5,100 injured over the last 6 weeks, trying to obtain meager amounts of food aid at so-called distribution sites run by the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, or GHF, a joint Israeli-U.S. private mercenary company. This week, the GHF closed its only food distribution point in central Gaza, forcing tens of thousands of Palestinians to travel long distances toward the south of Gaza in search of food. Al Jazeera reporter Tarek Abu Azoum stated on Wednesday, July 9th, that GHF suspended operations at the central Gaza site without prior notice, adding to the danger and confusion of starving Palestinians risking their lives to access a box of food. Abu Azoum stated that, quote, "the three aid hubs that remain operational are in the south, meaning that for hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in central Gaza, the route to get aid will be a lengthy, dangerous trip on foot. This concentration of aid in the south corresponds to what Israel is outlining under its proposal for a so-called humanitarian city amid the ruins of Rafah, which would see the transfer of Palestinians from other parts of Gaza. Palestinians are saying they fear Israel might forcibly prevent them from returning," end quote. These broad daylight plans for forced relocation of Palestinians into concentration camps in southern Gaza are part of the Israeli government's vision that Prime Minister and war crimes fugitive Benjamin Netanyahu and top Israeli officials have been pitching to the Trump administration this week in Washington. Israel's war minister, Israel Katz, this week stated that the so-called humanitarian city would be built, quote, "on the ruins of Rafah. The aim of the area would be to, quote, concentrate the population of Gaza and separate it from Hamas," Katz stated, adding that the Israeli government is looking into the possibility of partnering with an international entity to oversee its management. Katz encouraged, quote, "voluntary migration of Palestinians to other countries," and said the government wants to maintain a military presence in Gaza regardless of any ceasefire agreement. A source identified as an official familiar with the matter told Tel Aviv newspaper Haaretz on Wednesday that, quote, the plan is essentially to move all civilian Gazans south to a large tent city in Rafah, where they will have hospitals and plenty of food. How did the prime minister put it? Give them Ben and Jerry's for all I care, the source said. The Israeli source said that Netanyahu is not ruling out the option of Israel running the compound set to be established in Rafah. Quote, when the construction of the city is completed and everyone or almost everyone has moved south, the question will arise as to who operates these zones, the humanitarian island, to be established in the south, the official said. The prime minister thinks that in the short term, we should not be afraid to do the job. According to Katz, Haaretz reports, the plan involves moving 600,000 Palestinians, primarily from the Al-Mawasi area, into the new zone after security screenings. Once inside, residents would not be allowed to leave. The defense minister added that if conditions permit, construction of the city would begin during the 60-day Israel-Hamas ceasefire currently under negotiation. A proposal seen by the Reuters news agency, notably bearing the name of the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, described a plan to build concentration camps called humanitarian transit areas inside and possibly outside Gaza for Palestinians. Reuters reported that the $2 billion plan, quote, created sometime after February 11th and carrying the name of the U.S.-backed Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, or GHF, was submitted to the Trump administration, according to two sources, one of whom said it was recently discussed in the White House. The plan, reviewed by Reuters, describes the camps as large-scale and voluntary places where the Palestinian population in Gaza could, quote, temporarily reside, de-radicalize, reintegrate, and prepare to relocate if they wish to do so. A slide deck seen by Reuters goes into granular detail on the humanitarian transit zones, including how they would be implemented and what they would cost. It calls for using the sprawling facilities to, quote, gain trust with the local population and to facilitate U.S. President Donald Trump's vision for Gaza. Reuters added that the U.S. State Department declined to comment on the proposal, with a senior administration official denying that anything of the sort is under consideration and claiming that, quote, no resources are being directed toward that end in any way. This week, the New York-based Center for Constitutional Rights submitted a Freedom of Information Act request for documents related to the State Department's approval of $30 million in funding for the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. In its FOIA request, the major civil rights group says that it is seeking records that could reveal whether GHF was also created to further President Trump's Gaza Riviera ethnic cleansing plan. The Center for Constitutional Rights has previously joined other human rights and legal organizations in warning that individuals and entities involved in GHF could face legal liability for complicity in war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide. At the same time, an investigation this week published by the Financial Times revealed that the Boston Consulting Group, quote, helped establish the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, modeled the costs of relocating Palestinians from Gaza, and entered into a multi-million dollar contract to help launch an aid scheme for the shattered enclave. According to the investigation, the firm's team, quote, also built a financial model for the post-war reconstruction of Gaza, which included cost estimates for relocating hundreds of thousands of Palestinians from the Strip and the economic impact of such a mass displacement. One scenario estimated more than 500,000 people in Gaza would leave the enclave with relocation packages worth $9,000 per person, or around $5 billion in total. The international aid group Save the Children said it had already cut ties with the Boston Consulting Group, but this week called the firm's role in Gaza utterly unacceptable. While people are killed every day at these U.S.-staffed killing fields masquerading at so-called aid sites, and as thousands of tons of food, medicine, fuel, and supplies remain trapped on the other side of Israeli crossings, just kilometers away, Palestinian children are dying of starvation and preventable, treatable diseases in hospitals that are quickly going dark. On July 5th, Dr. Ahmed Al-Farah, head of pediatrics and maternity at the Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis, stated that fortified and specialized formula for premature or malnourished newborns is at severely low stocks. He was recorded inside the neonatal intensive care unit by journalist Bara Lafi.
Updating about neonatal ICU and the general condition in the hospital of Nasser Medical Complex. There is still shortage of milk, but there is a lot of volunteers who try to contact with us and try to help. They want to buy milk anyway from the local market and try to supply that milk for the hospital. But unfortunately, that milk is highly cost in its price, and the availability of this milk is a little amount.
That was Dr. Ahmed Al-Fara at the Nasser Medical Complex on July 5th. On Wednesday, July 9th, the hospital administration issued a warning saying that Nasser's fuel supplies had run dry and it was entering, quote, crucial and final hours. With the fuel counter nearing zero, doctors have entered the battle to save lives in a race against time, death, and darkness, the statement read. They work in operating rooms without air conditioning, the boiling heat, their faces are sweating, their bodies are weary from hunger and fatigue. But their eyes are still burning with hope and determination. Medical teams fight to the last breath. They have only their conscience and hope in those who hear the call. Save Nasser Medical Complex before it turns into a silent graveyard for patients who could have been saved. Also on July 9th, journalist Abdelkader Sabah reported from the Al-Helu hospital, where the fuel shortage because of Israel's total blockade is threatening the lives of premature newborns whose incubators need electricity to run. As four tiny newborns lay in one incubator, Sabah says, quote, these children require immediate and continuous oxygen, in addition to nutritional supplements such as milk and other pharmaceutical supplements, which are scarcely available in the Gaza Strip. Dr. Munir Al-Bursh, the director of the Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza, stated that Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City is also facing power cuts due to the fuel shortage. He said on Tuesday, July 8th, that, quote, we repeat what we've said before. When fuel is denied to hospitals, the ventilator stops for a premature baby who suffocates in silence. A patient in intensive care suddenly loses their heartbeat and no one can save them. A wounded young man bleeds on the waiting bed while no operating room is functioning. Dr. Mohammed Abu Salmiya, the director of Al-Shifa Hospital, reported that 13 intensive care unit patients, mostly on ventilators, about 100 babies in incubators, and 350 patients relying on kidney dialysis services are currently at risk because of the severe fuel shortage. He stressed that the hospital is already overwhelmed with hundreds of injured people and will no longer be able to perform surgeries. Quote, operating rooms will shut down, and we will not be able to treat the large influx of injured people. Our oxygen stations will also stop functioning, and a hospital without oxygen is no longer a hospital, he said. Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir el-Balah announced on July 8th that the hospital's main generator broke down and spare parts were unavailable for its maintenance. And with the fuel shortage, hundreds of patients' lives are at risk. Meanwhile, meningitis cases are surging, especially in children, according to local healthcare workers and international aid organizations. Dr. Ahmed Al-Fara at Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis, who I mentioned a few minutes ago, reported nearly 40 cases of newly admitted viral and bacterial meningitis in the last week. Al Jazeera said that in Gaza City, the pediatrics department at Al-Rantisi Children's Hospital recorded hundreds of cases in recent weeks. Hospitals still operating are overwhelmed with beds full and severe shortages of vital antibiotics. There is no space in the hospitals, said Dr. Mohammed Abu Magasib, the deputy medical coordinator for Doctors Without Borders in Gaza. There is no space to isolate. Airborne and life-threatening bacterial meningitis can spread in overcrowded tents, according to the WHO. Viral meningitis, though less serious, can easily spread in shelters with poor sanitation. The United Nations Humanitarian Office warned on Wednesday that, quote, in the north of Gaza, 10 water wells have stopped operating due to the shortage of fuel. Another 25 wells that are functioning only partially could also shut down soon. Shorter pumping hours, reduced water production, and limited solid waste collection provide fertile ground for diseases spreading, especially among vulnerable people, including children, older people, and pregnant women. Turning to the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces shot a 14-year-old Palestinian boy in the northern city of Nablus on July 6th. The child, Iyad Abdul Muati Iyad Shalakti, succumbed to his injuries and died on July 9th, according to Defense for Children International Palestine. The group says that Iyad was with two of his friends on a hill in the Askar refugee camp when an Israeli military operation began. After their withdrawal, the military vehicles stopped at the bottom of the hill and shot around 7 bullets at the children from a distance of about 20 to 40 meters away. Iyad remained lying on the ground, bleeding for around 15 minutes, DCIP stated. When his friends tried to lift him, they were targeted again with around 20 bullets. The two children were injured, one in the right hand and the other in the foot. An ambulance arrived at the hill, took Iyad and transported him to Rafidia Hospital, where he was admitted to the emergency room. The doctors determined he had sustained multiple bullet wounds to his right flank, right foot, and abdomen, as well as shrapnel in both hands. Israeli forces have killed 32 Palestinian children in the occupied West Bank in 2025, according to documentation collected by DCIP. 206 Palestinian children have been killed by Israeli forces and settlers in the West Bank since October 7, 2023, the group says. The United Nations reported that Israeli forces shot and killed two Palestinian men on July 7th, also in the Nablus governorate, during a raid on a house, using loudspeakers to demand the surrender of a man wanted by the Israeli army. According to eyewitnesses, the man's father-in-law opened the door and was shot. A neighbor and relative who attempted to assist the injured man was also shot and killed. According to eyewitnesses, Israeli forces then opened fire, sent a drone into the house, and forced another Palestinian to enter the home to reportedly locate the wanted Palestinian, who was later found killed outside the house. His body was withheld by Israeli forces, the UN said. Meanwhile, house demolitions continue to accelerate around the West Bank. The Wafa news agency reported on Wednesday that Israeli forces carried out large demolition campaigns in Ramallah, Jerusalem, and Nablus, destroying at least 8 homes and 2 agricultural structures. Demolitions are ongoing in Tulkarem and Nur Shams refugee camps. Despite a recent injunction by the Israeli High Court temporarily freezing demolition orders, the UN says that Israel began destroying Palestinian homes in the 2 refugee camps on July 7th. Targeting 104 residential buildings. In Nur Shams camp, residents near the camp reported that a building was set on fire by Israeli forces within the area, the UN stated. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight Heroic and Traumatized, a volunteer paramedic story by Hend Abu Hello, writing from Gaza. Hend profiles a young paramedic who she calls Yusuf Ra'ed. He did not want to give his real name for fear that he and his family might become targets for Israel. Yusuf had been a volunteer paramedic with the Red Crescent since 2012, when he was just 14. He was one of the youngest volunteers in the history of the Red Crescent, he told Hend proudly. He and his wife and child had been displaced from Jabalia in Gaza's north, and though not on duty, Yusuf had no second thought about coming to Hend's father's rescue after Israel bombed the Nuseirat refugee camp in central Gaza last August. Hend's father was trapped when a stairwell he was standing on collapsed in the airstrike. Hend writes, quote, medical professionals and emergency responders like Yusuf have all been particularly affected over the duration of Israel's genocide in Gaza. At least 1,400 have been killed, while 360 are detained. In December 2023, while working at the Red Crescent headquarters in Jabalia, which was doubling as both a medical center and refuge for displaced people, Yusuf was detained by Israeli troops along with dozens of others, including colleagues and displaced civilians. Blindfolded and handcuffed, he was transferred to the infamous Sidi Tayman detention camp, described as a torture camp by rights groups. They threatened to kill me constantly, Yusuf said. They even accused me of being a Houthi fighter. I kept pleading, I'm just a civilian, a first responder, but they didn't care. He said four soldiers then beat him up. Yusuf, who has chronic asthma, pleaded with the soldiers to stop. I started vomiting blood and gasping hard, Yusuf recounted, which he said only made them laugh. During one interrogation in early January, a soldier asked for his home address. Yusuf naively told the soldier. Hours later, the soldier told him, which turned out to be true, that they had bombed his house in Jabalia, where his wife, toddler son, and other relatives had been sheltering until the Israeli military ordered people to evacuate the north. I broke down, begging to know if my family had survived. They just laughed. We will kill everyone in Gaza, he said they told him. In another interrogation, they showed him a photo of his wife and son. If you don't give us what we want, we'll kill them, he said they told him. One click, that's all. He kept telling them that he was just a first responder and that he didn't have the information they were looking for, which, he said, was the location of the Israeli captives in Gaza or members of Hamas. In January 2024, Yusuf was released at Karam Abu Salem border crossing. Run, Yusuf said he was told. Run. If you stop, we'll shoot you. The first thing he did was call his brother, Abdullah, who informed Yusuf that their mother and four other siblings had fled to Rafah, while Yusuf's wife, son, and father remained trapped in the north. Those are excerpts from Heroic and Traumatized, a Volunteer Paramedic Story by Hend Abu Helu, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. Finally, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Palestine and around the world. The camp's Breakers breakdance crew in Gaza hold regular dance and art classes for kids. And this week they hosted breakdance competitions with some of their students. That was from the Camps Breakers crew in Gaza. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.
You're listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different U.S. and European cities. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. On July 7, 2025, American Muslims for Palestine, in collaboration with Code Pink, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, and the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations held a press conference in front of the White House condemning Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's visit to the U.S. Several speakers delivered remarks at that press conference, and I'm going to air most of them. Let's begin with a brief intro from Muhammad Habba with American Muslims for Palestine organization.
My name is Muhammad Habba, and I am the Development Director with American Muslims for Palestine. Today, we are joined here, American Muslims for Palestine, CARE, the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations, Code Pink, and numerous other organizations that are here to discuss the upcoming meetings and the trip this week of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. As you all know, the genocide in Gaza has lasted since October of 2023, now over 21 months into this genocide, with countless lives lost and unfathomable destruction. We've seen in the past few weeks this genocide extend and expand, with more than 100 people dying each day in Gaza. as the brutality of the Israeli military continues. Today, Benjamin Netanyahu will be meeting with President Trump, and our organizations are here to discuss this meeting and to talk about what is needed for the people of Gaza and what is needed for the people of Palestine.
The first speaker was Dr. Osama Abu Rashid, Executive Director of American Muslims for Palestine. Let's listen in.
For the past 21 months, Israel has been committing a brutal genocide in the Gaza Strip with unwavering American support. 7 months of, or seven of those months under the presidency of Donald Trump. Today, Trump meets with internationally wanted war criminal Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House to discuss a temporary ceasefire in Gaza. Perhaps Trump seeks to end the genocide in pursuit of a Nobel Peace Prize. Although those complicit in genocidal wars are never deserving of such honors. Yet, if Trump truly wishes to bring an end to the Israeli campaign of extermination and systematic starvation against Gaza, backed by U.S. support, he must first act like a president of the United States. He must assert unequivocally to Netanyahu, who holds the reins in their dynamic. Over the past 7 months, Netanyahu has proven he can outmaneuver Trump just as he did with Joe Biden. In fact, he has succeeded in dragging Trump into a war against Iran. Today, Trump stands at a pivotal juncture in his presidency. He must choose between demonstrating the strength he so often proclaims or resigning himself to the role of yet another figure manipulated by Netanyahu. President Trump recently announced that Israel has supposedly accepted the necessary conditions for a 60-day ceasefire in Gaza. This ceasefire must not be another mirage. Israel has already shattered previous agreements and launched renewed bombings campaigns during supposed pauses. Any legitimate ceasefire must be honored in full without loopholes or backdoor military operations. Trump must publicly and unequivocally demand that Netanyahu agree to an immediate, unconditional, and permanent ceasefire. No loopholes, no staged pauses. Should Israel once again breach its ceasefire commitment, it's long past time for the United States to cease playing the role of diplomatic shield and begin imposing real consequences. After nearly 2 years of relentless genocide, well over 60,000 Palestinians, and this is a moderate estimate, have been confirmed to be slaughtered in Gaza, including more than 500 just this last month while seeking aid. The Palestinian people cannot afford another round of false promises, manufactured delays, or deceptive ceasefire schemes designed to justify continued killing under the guise of diplomacy. Humanitarian aid must flow through the United Nations and international humanitarian agencies, not under the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which has become nothing short of a death trap for starving civilians. The Israeli newspaper Haaretz has exposed GHF as a U.S. and Israeli-backed front for ethnic cleansing operation. According to the report, Israeli forces have killed over 549 Palestinians and injured more than 4,000 at food distribution points using live fire, tank shells, and mortars to create killing fields. Palestinians must not be made to choose between hunger and death. Any genuine humanitarian corridor must comply with the principles of humanity, impartiality, and independence and neutrality. If President Trump is serious about ending this genocide. His administration must stop funding the mercenary-backed GHF, open all crossings for UN aid, and force Israel to lift its inhumane blockade on food, water, medicine, and fuel in compliance with both US and international humanitarian laws. Furthermore, no foreign entity, neither Israel, the U.S., nor regional governments, has the legal or moral right to dictate Gaza's future. Only the Palestinian people can decide their future, their political future, and only them can rebuild their homeland on their own terms. Any attempt to exclude Palestinians from those negotiations or to impose a Western-designed post-war framework is a continuation of colonial violence. This moment is pivotal. The U.S. cannot continue underwriting Israel's war crimes and gaslighting the world with empty ceasefire headlines, and must start taking accountability and let Palestinians live with dignity. This is not a time for vague diplomacy or half measures. Over 60,000 Palestinians have been murdered by Israel. Mass starvation is no longer hypothetical. It is a harrowing reality unfolding before our eyes. Gaza's hospitals are in ruin. The Israeli military has turned food lines into execution zones. Without every day that passes without real action and accountability is another day of bloodshed. Every time we hear of a possible ceasefire, Israel undermines it and continues its relentless killing spree. Enough is enough. This is the third visit of Benjamin Netanyahu to the White House. The past two visits, Netanyahu was able to play Donald Trump. The past two visits, Netanyahu established a known fact that he is the real boss when it comes to this White House, whether under Democrats or Republican. Every time Netanyahu, since Bill Clinton, has proven time and again that he can outplay, outmaneuver, he can manipulate our presidents as our Congress. Enough is enough. America is a complete partner in the genocide that is taking place in Gaza. America is not a neutral party. Trump is not a mediator. Trump is a partner in this genocide. He has to bring himself to end this genocide, as he has to force Netanyahu to bring this genocide to an end. Because again, enough is enough. The so-called big, beautiful spending bill that he just passed is infringing on Americans' rights, taking away from our Medicare, from the benefits to the poor, while we're giving to Israel, where every Israeli citizen is enjoying a free health care at the expense of the American people. Why the American people are dying and have no access to health care? Enough is enough. It is time to restore America as he promised. America's first, but America is no longer first under this president. He is lying, as the previous presidents have been lying. Time to prioritize the United States of America and to prioritize human dignity, human life in this genocide. Thank you.
That was Dr. Osama Abu Rashid, Executive Director of American Muslims for Palestine. Let's listen next to Robert McCown, Director of Government Affairs at the Council on American Islamic Relations.
My name is Robert McCaw. I am the Government Affairs Director for the Council on American Islamic Relations. We are not here to welcome a guest. We are here to expose a war criminal. We're here because our government behind us is rewarding genocide with weapons, with money, and with silence. President Trump promised to end unnecessary foreign entanglements, claiming that he would be the president of peace, that only he could deliver a ceasefire to Gaza, a ceasefire that Netanyahu broke. Yet, standing inside the White House today is Benjamin Netanyahu, a wanted war criminal, with his blood-soaked hands not outstretched in remorse, but to demand more bombs, more weapons, and more U.S. complicity. Every handshake, every deal, every photo op stains with American leaders, stains the hands of all Americans with the blood of children from Gaza. The International Criminal Court has issued a warrant for Netanyahu's arrest for his war crimes, for his crimes against humanity, for the destruction of Gaza. But instead of being held accountable, he's being embraced by the very country supplying him these bombs. This is not a diplomatic visit. This is a disgrace, and this is not what some people are calling a victory lap. Not while children are starving in Gaza. Not while babies are wasting away without formula. People are saying that Gaza is on the brink of starvation. No, Gaza is starving. I have seen the dead children, emaciated, wasted. It's happening now. And not while Israeli forces are bombing birthday parties with American-made weapons. Just days ago, a 500-pound MK-82 bomb, manufactured here in the United States, sold to Netanyahu recently under a $510 million approved deal by President Trump, was dropped on a crowded cafe in Gaza during a children's birthday party. Over 40 were killed. Women, children, entire families blown apart. And as we just heard, hundreds of people every day are dying in Gaza. This is what American foreign policy looks like. This is what our tax dollars are funding. We should be outraged. This is what happens when you put the weapons in the hands of war criminals and call it support. And that is why we're here today, because it's about to get worse. This is not self-defense. This is genocide. And Netanyahu is not a negotiator of peace. He's here to beg for B-2 bombers and bunker busters, weapons capable of leveling underground facilities and igniting our regional inferno. And this administration's listening. Just 2 weeks ago, the Trump administration joined Netanyahu in launching an illegal, unauthorized attack on Iran's facilities. It was carried out against the advice of the U.S. intelligence community and without any imminent threat. Congress never approved it. The Constitution never authorized it. And it was a political stunt dressed up as military strategy, and it dragged us one step closer to a catastrophic war. And now, Netanyahu is back a third time, demanding more weapons, more blood, and more American complicity. This is not defense. This is not a deterrence. So this is what we're demanding here today. First, a full, immediate, and unconditional ceasefire. No more pauses, no more temporary deals, a real end to the real slaughter. Netanyahu broke the first ceasefire without American response. It cannot happen again. Second, unrestricted humanitarian access to all of Gaza, including through the Rafah gate. That means baby formula. That means medical supplies, fuel, construction materials, not just for survival, but for dignity. And third, the United States must end all involvement in the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Aid Foundation and investigate its role for the mass killings of Palestinians seeking aid. American mercenaries are now accused of shooting starving civilians, and they must be prosecuted. And fourth, any post-war future for Gaza must be decided by the Palestinians, not by Netanyahu, not by Trump, and not by a foreign occupation. There can be no peace while the bombs are still falling. There can be no justice while war criminals are making deals in D.C. and getting handouts from American taxpayers. And there can be no credibility for America while we bankroll genocide. Congress must act to cancel all weapon sales. Our nation needs to cut off the money and end our complicity in crimes that will haunt our country for generations. We're here to draw a line. No more bombs, no more blood, no more genocide, no more occupation, and no more apartheid. Not in our name. Thank you.
That was Robert McCow, Director of Government Affairs at the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Let's listen next to Sarah with the Palestinian Youth Movement.
I'm a member of the Palestinian Youth Movement, a transnational independent grassroots organization of Palestinian and Arab youth in the diaspora fighting for the liberation of our land from Zionism and imperialism. Today will be the third time that Benjamin Netanyahu meets with President Trump while in office, and his fourth visit to the United States since the beginning of the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza. This will also be his third trip to the U.S. since the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant for Netanyahu for his war crimes committed in Gaza. Netanyahu belongs in The Hague and not in Washington, D.C., where Trump and top U.S. officials are rolling out the red carpet for him once again. He's also here escaping testimony for his corruption trial, which Trump denounced, and Netanyahu is here evading accountability from his own government, attempting to influence the case from abroad. However, we know that Netanyahu is not the problem and not the sole corrupt actor, but he is a symptom and a manifestation of an oppressive system, and he represents Zionism in all of its forms, and he has demonstrated to the world the evils of this depraved ideology and how it manifests. We see clearly with each of Netanyahu's visits how he and the White House conspire to advance Zionist and imperialist interests, not only in Palestine, but in the region. Their collusion comes at a great cost to human life, with estimates of over 200,000 murdered in Gaza. And their collaboration also attacks the sovereignty of nations like Iran, Lebanon, Yemen, and Syria, and ignores the calls of the American people to end these endless wars and enact an arms embargo on Israel. We witnessed the coordination between Israel and the U.S. to bomb Iran, and their lies spread about the Iranian nuclear program in an attempt to manufacture consent for this aggression. However, the American people recognized these lies for what they were and demanded U.S. hands off of Iran, an arms embargo on Israel, and for politicians to stop spending frivolously on these wars, on these endless wars of aggression, and instead to focus on the plights of the American people who desire healthcare, education, and sound public infrastructure. In the lead up to this meeting, we have seen reports on the Abraham Shield and normalization deals, which we know are designed to stifle the popular will of the Arab masses. These plans aim to fundamentally alter the political, social, and economic conditions of the region to become subservient to imperial and Zionist interests and undermine the sovereignty of the Arab people. These normalization deals come at the expense of Arab nations to protect their interests, calling for disarmament, security corridors, and coordination, transfer of control of Gaza to outside countries, and dissolution of social institutions that foster the people's resistance to imperialism and Zionism in the region. This is the U.S. and Israel attempting to erase any form of resistance to their aggressions as they steal more Arab land and Arab wealth. What the past 21 months of genocide have taught us is that the U.S. and Israeli Zionist ruling class have the same interests. Any supposed division is superficial. This genocide could not have continued, and Israel would have collapsed without continued diplomatic, political, financial, and military support from the U.S. They both support the project of imperialism. It is both of their war on the Palestinian and Arab people. They both are looking to undermine the sovereignty of our people in the Middle East and people here in the United States. They work in opposition to the interests of the people of the world. While millions of Americans are struggling to survive, to pay their rent, and to take care of their loved ones, their tax dollars are being stolen from them by the U.S. government and by these imperial actors to fund and greenlight a genocide. Each U.S. manufactured bomb dropped in Palestine, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, and in Yemen, and in Iran lined the pockets of the ruling class in this country instead of improving the livelihood of millions. And as a movement here in the United States and in the Imperial Core, we have a responsibility to counter these deals and to confront these meetings and expose these plans for what they truly are. We have a responsibility to stand with our people in Gaza and across the region as they face the brutality of Zionism and Western hegemony, and to demand and achieve an arms embargo on Israel. Thank you.
That was Sarah with the Palestinian Youth Movement. Medea Benjamin, co-founder of CodePink, also spoke at the press conference in front of the White House. Let's take a listen.
I don't know how people ignore what's been happening in Gaza. I guess they don't wake up, like many of us do, to look at how many people have been killed the night before. 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 people in Gaza. I guess they don't look at the pictures of the starving children. It boggles the mind to think that we have been witnessing this for so many months, and the failures of our international institutions, the failure of the Arab countries, the failure, of course, of our own government, which is so complicit in this. And it's not just a slogan to say that Netanyahu belongs in The Hague and not here in the White House or here meeting with our Secretary of Defense, Hegseth, or in Congress where he will be tomorrow. He belongs in The Hague. That's what the International Criminal Court says. And if we believe at all in any kind of rules-based order, he should be in The Hague. In respect to the ceasefire that he's supposed to be negotiating right now, of course the people of Gaza are desperate for a ceasefire. We are desperate for a ceasefire. But how can you trust Israel that has violated every ceasefire agreement that it has made with the Palestinians? How can you trust a country that's been starving children? How can you trust a country that's been violating the ceasefire with Lebanon every day since the ceasefire was signed? How can you trust a country that unprovoked invaded Iran, a country without nuclear weapons, while Israel and the U.S. are the ones with the nuclear weapons? It's hard to have any faith in that. And a ceasefire is just the bare minimum. I have been to Gaza many times and saw way before October 7th the desperation of the people there because of the blockade, because of the siege. There was a 45% unemployment rate, not because the people of Gaza are not entrepreneurial, but because they couldn't import and export. Students couldn't leave the country to take advantage of scholarships they had. People could not leave when they desperately needed hospitalization in other countries. This siege of Gaza has meant that fishermen trying to fish would be killed as they went out trying to bring home fish for their families. The siege, the blockade, has to end. And then we also have to talk about who is being represented by this White House and by Congress. It is quite amazing that despite the mainstream media, that the majority of American people now do not support Israel. And this goes across all ages. Before it was just younger people who understood what was happening. Now it's all age groups. It's Republicans, Democrats, Independents, it's blacks, it's whites, it's all demographics in the United States. They don't want to keep sending money and bombs to Israel. And yet, who is doing that? The people in the White House and the vast majority of people in Congress. They are representing the weapons industry, the tech industry. They are representing the lobby groups like AIPAC. And when they say America first, it is a lie, because sending billions and billions of our dollars to a genocidal regime is not America first. So we are here to say, send Netanyahu to The Hague, end the blockade of Gaza, and end the complicity with our U.S. government with a genocide regime. Start representing the American people, not Israel. Thank you.
That was Medea Benjamin, co-founder of GodPink. Rabbi David Feldman also spoke at the press conference. Let's take a listen.
We are standing here in front of the White House while Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, is visiting here. This happens after 21 months of genocide in Gaza, where tens of thousands of innocent men, women, and children are being mass murdered, and little children are being starved to death. This is about time to stop. The world is waking up already for this entire time, and it is time for the rest of the world to wake up. We as Jewish people, when we are seeing what's happening, when all of this is happening supposedly in our name, this is embarrassing to us as a people. And this is a desecration of our religion, when the Jewish religion is being misused to justify all these crimes. Netanyahu comes here supposedly representing all Jews, and he wants to make a statement that if you oppose crimes he is committing, then you are opposing the Jewish people, which ends up being anti-Semitic. This is misleading, and all of us, the world, has to understand, we have to know better. This is nothing about anti-Semitism. This is about crimes taking place Benjamin Netanyahu, a war criminal, wanted by the international court. As was said before, he doesn't belong in the White House, he belongs in The Hague. According to Judaism, all of this is wrong. Killing, stealing, oppressing an entire people, these are not only crimes in international law, these are crimes in Judaism. We have to remember that anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism in any way. Judaism and Zionism is not the same. Judaism is a religion, while Zionism is a purely political movement, should never be conflated. When you conflate the two, you are not only doing an injustice to Palestine when you are silencing the voice of the righteous to speak up for the oppressed, but this is doing wrong for the Jewish people as well, because this is making a statement as if all Jews are accountable to what is happening. What is going on is destructive to everyone. It's a Nakba, it's a catastrophe for Palestine, and it's a danger for the Jewish people. Netanyahu is not here for a self-defense of the Jewish people. This movement of Zionism is offensive from day one. This is criminal from day one. This is doing so much harm to humanity from day one, and this needs to stop. We are here demanding a ceasefire, not this ceasefire that we were experiencing for the past months. As was said before, Israel is not to be trusted with a ceasefire. We need to have an end to all of these crimes. We plead with the United States of America. We plead for an arms embargo now. This was supposed to happen a long time ago. We want to see all of this stop. We want to see this stop for the sake of everyone involved, to restore peace that did exist in Palestine. We as Jewish people lived in Palestine before the 1920s, before the movement of Zionism. Contrary to Zionist propaganda, all what we are seeing, this endless cycle of bloodshed where everyone suffers, this is not because of a difference of religions. We had differences of religions for the longest time. It is the crimes of Israel, it is the occupation of Palestine, which is unfortunately causing this destruction to everyone. This needs to stop. We hope this stops immediately, and we hope to see very soon a better future for everyone involved. Palestine deserves freedom. Palestine deserves a better future. Thank you very much.
That was Rabbi David Feldman speaking at the press conference held in front of the White House on July 7, 2025, condemning Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's visit to the U.S. You've been listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different U.S. and European cities. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.